Welcome back to the Whispering Gallery with me, Suzanne, your friendly apparition of the arts. Why not join or eyeball the nearby shadows for things that shouldn't be there? Isn't that always when you spot a spider? Or was it a shadow person? That would be frightening. This is Midnight Mother Goose, Episode 3. Let's see, where were we? We've talked about Charlie, Charles Perrault, the salons in France, fairy tales with morals, the Beast of Gévaudan, German chocolate cake, Black Forest cake, the very prolific French illustrator Gustave Doré, the very popular English illustrator Arthur Rackham. Besides the careful extrication of the identities of the mostly invisible original peasant storytellers, there's more to this story. Let's get to it, shall we? Flashlights ready? Let's turn the page. Oh wait, quick update about the dogs. We haven't had one for a little bit. Shotzi, our little red doxy, received sweet relief with her allergy shot, and she's renewed her license in Utah, all official and ready for summer, with a brand new, up-to-date rabies tag. She's been enjoying belly scratches and napping in the warm spring sunshine. And she is absolutely gaga for little Phoebe. The closest reference point would be Nana, the children's nursemaid in Peter Pan. Boomer's winter coat arrived late, and spring arrived early, so we're expecting him to start shedding any day. He has been obsessed with turkey tendons, and Boomer, who has fought with Moritz and Max, Rosebud and Molly, Axel, you get the drift, lots of fosters, has a soft spot for our current foster, Luna. He'll growl at Shotzi if he thinks she's playing too hard with Luna. It's cute to see Luna trying to get Boomer to play until he gives in. She is 13 months old, still a puppy. Now, for Luna, our foster dog, she has been through a lot. Mega esophagus, ME, which is a permanent condition that will not heal. She was born with it. Aspiration pneumonia, emergency veterinary visit, ICU, and hospitalization, surgery, G-tube, and battling malnutrition, keeping food down due to the mega esophagus condition. Luna's story is available to listen to for free over on the Whispering Gallery's Patreon page. I hope to see you over there. There's a good selection of content for Midnight Mother Goose over on Patreon, including another mystery fairy tale coloring page. There's a list of things to look for while you're working on it. Okay, update's done. Let's get to the rest of the mystery and step into the gallery. The Weird Problem of Fairy Tales. With the gnarly, twisting trees in Rackham's forests, tiny gnomes and fairies in flight, we're headed into the weird problem of fairy tales, sometimes strange or cruel. Other times, the stories don't make any sense. Really bad choices are made. They dodge and weave and can surprise us. Quote, have you ever wondered maybe witches are just fairies who shed off their wings? Or maybe society cut off their wings? Who knows? And they continued to fly by a broomstick made with the scattered fragmented dust of their wings. Unquote. Debatrayi Banerjee. The fairy tales I've been reading are not at all what I've been conditioned to believe they were. They're darker. Not just, ooh, that was scary dark, but unsettling and raw. Sometimes pretty gross. We always hear that original fairy tales are darker, but reading them is something else entirely. We started with Perrault's Red Riding Hood, and yes, even the Grimm version feels restrained by comparison. Then came Donkey Skin, which left me thinking, ew. Bluebeard clearly needed to get his by the end of the story. And the Blue Light, I kept thinking, poor guy down on his luck. Of course he's going to have compassion if roles were turned. But he shows his colors as being a jerk, just like the ruler. Surely he can't keep making bad choices, right? And yet, he can. If there are allegories, how do we figure out what they are if they aren't so obvious? The meaning may not be what we want it to be. We may have to think outside of the box and just be left puzzled, even when the meaning or possible morals related to the stories become clear. Wilhelm loved polishing the stories, and there were multiple editions over which he improved story pacing, added moral elements, and softened the violence and sexual elements. So, the tales became a hybrid. Part folk story memory, part literary editing. Before we head further into heroine territory, Otto Ubbe Lode, a German, like the Grimm brothers, and his illustrations might help us settle back down to earth and ground the episode. Otto for the reset! Otto Ubbe Lode was focused in realism, a German illustrator. He drew scenes for the stories from his everyday world, using some real-world, dare I guess, plain air reference for his illustrations. Yes, I just googled it, plain air, working from observation, unlike Gustave Doré. He worked in intimate landscape, or in French, paysage in time. This was a brand new category to me. It's an art period, I think. Wikipedia reads, quote, paysage in time was a style of painting that focused on simple, unadorned landscapes and emerged in the mid-19th century. It was the precursor to the Impressionist style, unquote. Also, Chrome Google AI quoted from Wikipedia, which said, quote, paysage in time is a French art historical term translating to, quote, intimate landscape, unquote. It refers to a style of painting primarily associated with the mid-19th century Barbizon school in France that focused on simple, unpretentious, and personal interpretations of nature, unquote. Rapunzel's Tower, referenced by Otto in the 1909 fairy tales he illustrated, is still around and can be found at the address Emunah, AMONAU, 35083 Wetter, Hessen, Germany. Rapunzel term, or Rapunzel house, a 17th century timber frame tower with a sandstone base and charming bluebell-like roof. Talk about a cool reference. The photo of the tower and the contour drawing with Rapunzel are a dead-on match. Otto lived in Hesse, a state in Germany where Castle is located, which is where Jacob and Wilhelm Grimm worked. When he illustrated their tales, he used the half-timbered houses, streets, countryside to create his drawings. More true to life than fantasy, normal life around town, contrasting that with the strangeness in fairy tales, just works. Rapunzel's crazy long hair falling down from the tower window. The tower looks kind of like a photo in his realistic style. From Christine Hepperman's Poisoned Apples, Poems for You, My Pretty, coat, and those women were sneaky. They understood that including fantastical elements in their tales, golden eggs, singing harps, talking frogs, worked to mask a deeper purpose. It made the stories look on the surface like a mere bubble of nonsense, within which it was possible to utter harsh truths, to say what you dare, about the state of women's lives. Because they were just stories, right? Harmless little fantasies. Unquote. So pour yourself a little juice glass of milk and grab a piece of black forest cake. Go ahead and take a bite, savor the texture and taste of fresh-baked sponge cake and the warm, comforting taste of the chocolate. Then the melt of whipped cream and touch of vanilla, followed by the sweet tang of the cherries. The Golden Heroines, the women who told and illustrated our fairy tales. Lean in, dear listener, as together we disentangle some of the fairy tale and Mother Goose contributors who were not of the farming or peasant vein, after all. Some lived as far away as across the street. The women contributing to Grimm's collection, over 50% of them, were women who were educated to the middle class and had names. The illustrators of fairy tales and nursery rhymes were more than an incognito first initial last name, and together we can lean into the restoration of these artists and storytellers. While incomplete, we will take some steps to follow the breadcrumb path of understanding. Once upon a time, Dori, Rackham, Ubaloda, and a few other men brought fairy tales to life with their illustrations. Shadowy forests, half-timbered houses, a murderous wolf and witch, and magic. But there were women afoot, and they carried their own light. Let's set our dessert plates aside and grab our flashlights and follow them into the enchanted forest, where we'll meet a few of them. Fairy tale illustration and drawing and painting their own exits to climb out of the box of societal norms of the period were in order. This kind of escape is difficult, whether you stand alone like a new kid in a class, or as a woman or man, or no matter your pronouns, standing up for an appropriate work environment and professional treatment. We can align together in our wish for common courtesy for ourselves and each other, and a world of equality and kindness. The ways these illustrators found their way out into the world was quite a journey for each and every one. Thank heavens one was encouraged by her family, one had her work appear under her husband's name at first, and then there was the disappearing woman trick. It was not uncommon to list female authors and illustrators with an initial for their first name, then poof, nobody would have a clue they were a woman. Others were published, but there were some points of view that did not allow for working moms. It was be one or the other, or some. As contemporaries of male illustrators, women were in a pretty structured place in their world. For example, Wilhelm and Jacob's younger sister, Charlotte Emily Grimm, in the book Clever Maids, Lottie, wasn't a fan of being stuck cleaning up after her brothers. She would leave the house as her brothers did. She was not going to be following them around cleaning up after them. She was not happy with her place in the household when her mother passed, with her brothers expecting her to keep the house clean for them. It's easier if we all pitch in, right? As far as the illustrators, they kept trying. And that requires stick-to-itness that has backbone, courage, and passion. Or maybe also a deep and abiding irritation, created like a grain of sand, becoming a luminous pearl, like beautiful illustrations and continuous hard work, instead of being crushed by unfair limitations. Still, they persisted and kept trying, kept going. Women Illustrators of the Golden Age by Mary Carolyn Waldrop. Howard Pyle opened his own school in 1900 and taught 60 female illustrators during his time as a teacher. By 1904, Howard wouldn't work with any more women. He stated, quote, "The pursuit of art interferes with a girl's social life and destroys her chances of getting married. Girls are, after all, at best only qualified for sentimental work." Unquote. Oof. Jesse Wilcox Smith, quote, "If a woman elects to be a housewife and mother, that is her sphere and no other. Circumstances may, but volition should not lead her from it. If, on the other hand, she elects to go into business or the arts, she must sacrifice motherhood in order to fill successfully her chosen sphere." Unquote. Let's enter the land of fairy tales to find a sampler of these golden heroines, shall we? Marguerite in Wisconsin, 1889 to 1987, the woman that started this whole section about heroines was Marguerite D'Angeli, whose book of nursery and Mother Goose rhymes was beautifully illustrated with soft, ethereal watercolor and colored pencils, with a sketch-like, dreamy quality. This was one of my books of nursery rhymes while growing up, and I think the images mattered to me more than the words, and just turning the pages to see another. Marguerite illustrated a book of Mother Goose that is especially ethereal and beautiful. That's why she was one of my picks and just a good egg, so to speak. Respecting all of us are different. There's a YouTube interview of her speaking about her work as an illustrator on our Patreon page. Visit the Patreon page to watch the video of Marguerite's interview as an illustrator and see the cover art for her nursery rhymes there. Marguerite balanced being a mom of 5 children with being an illustrator, and a point of interest, she too had a photographic memory. She was about kindness over conformity, and that showed in her work. I guess a common theme would be we're all the same, even with differences. An award-winning illustrator, she received 2 Caldecott Honor Awards, one for Yanni Wonder Nose and the other for Book of Nursery and Mother Goose Rhymes that was just mentioned. She also received a Newbery Medal for Door in the Wall and for Black Fox of Lorne. Quote, "She was also one of the first children's authors to address racism with Bright April, 1946, which narrated the discrimination faced by a young black girl in Philadelphia." Unquote. D'Angeli also wrote historical fiction for children beginning with Skipack School in 1939, about a family of German immigrants in the early 1700s. Historical fiction was her greatest success. From her Wikipedia page, quote, "Her work explored and depicted the traditions and rich cultural diversity of common people, more frequently overlooked. A semi-autobiographical Great Depression family, African-American children experiencing the sting of racial prejudice, Polish mine workers aspiring to life beyond the Pennsylvania coal mines, the physically handicapped, colonial Mennonites, the Amish, 19th century Quakers supporting the Underground Railroad, immigrants, and other traditional or ethnic peoples." D'Angeli's books carry an underlying message that we are really all the same, and that all of us deserve tolerance, care, consideration, and respect. If you'd like to explore more artists from this era, I've gathered a small library of Golden Age women illustrators on the Patreon page, including downloadable books for e-readers and a few examples of their work. Despite the social norms of the time, the Golden Age of illustration, it was a shared effort, co-ed, women and men, pouring their hearts into their art, illustrators, engravers, printers, and even the storytellers of oral tradition, were all pitching in to keep the hearth fire lit together. This wasn't just in English-speaking countries. You could call this a phenomena because it was unfolding around the world in many cultures. While researching, I saw illustrators, men and women, working on illustrating their stories in India, South America, also in Japan. Remember The Sweet Mystery of Sugar Skulls in Season 4, Episode 7, The Art of Jose Guadalupe Posada, for example? So heroines, the invisible maids. From The Wishing Table, the gold donkey and the cudgel in the sack, from the Brothers Grimm, Sarah Beth Durst said, quote, "The middle son gets a magic donkey. When you shout the word Bricklebrit, it spews gold pieces out of, and I quote, its front and back." Yes, folks, thing I love number 4, the Bricklebrit donkey. You shout a word, and gold comes flying out its butt. Fairy tales don't get much better than that, unquote. I bought a copy of the book Clever Maids, The Secret History of the Grimm Fairy Tales by Valerie Paradis, and cracked it open on my Kindle. Let's take our flashlights and check out some interesting details for a moment, shall we? The brothers did not hesitate to ask their sister Lottie's friends for stories. Women were a source of storytelling, and that was how the oral tradition had been recorded and passed down in general in 19th century Germany. The following women, both middle class and aristocratic class, are storytellers credited with providing at least half of the stories collected by the Brothers Grimm. And on an interesting note, the Hassenflugs had Huguenot roots, meaning their storytelling was influenced by French fairy tales, Charles Perrault. Who were these quasi-invisible clever maids who Wilhelm and Jacob recorded the oral tradition of fairy tale telling? The ones I know about were Gretchen Wild and Dorchen Wild, Old Marie, a maidservant of the Wild family, Suzette Hassenflug of the Huguenot family, also Jeanette Hassenflug, Marie Hassenflug, and Amelia Hassenflug of the same family, Lottie Grimm, Dorothea Weimann, the von Haxthausen family, and the von Drost-Hasselhoff family. Quote, "Fairy tale, wonder tale involving marvelous elements and occurrences, though not necessarily about fairies," unquote. That was from Britannica.com/art/fairytale. Wilhelm and Jacob wrote down the stories and refined them. Grimm's fairy tales has been translated into over 150 languages and had 7 major editions while they were alive. Wilhelm Grimm kept working on and editing the language, softening the harsher parts. Shadows from fairy tales feel like they could drift between the pages of books to reality, behind copses of fir trees, under starlight, bringing some harsh lessons that still ring true from Hansel and Gretel, Little Red Riding Hood, Donkey Skin, and Bluebeard, with dire consequences. The pure magic of the elves and the shoemaker, Ashputtel, aka Cinderella, and the 12 dancing princesses. In the Harz Mountains in Germany, there's a phenomenon where science explains the ghost in the mist. It's called a Brockenspecter, a Brockenspenst, an optical illusion where a person's shadow is cast into fog below them, growing into an enormous towering figure ringed with a halo of colored light. With the sun behind them, the observer and water droplets in the air, a ghost appears where it doesn't exist. Along the way, we've hunkered down in the salons of France before the Age of Enlightenment from other goose tales, survived the true-to-life terror of the Beast of Gévaudan, and followed the fairy tale road after leaving the depths of the Black Forest in Germany, at least the Whispering Gallery podcast version. There we unveiled the peasants who shared stories with the Brothers Grimm, revealing neighbors, friends, and educated middle-class women whose names we are rediscovering. Storytellers whose voices carried the oral tradition forward, and those whose tales were later imagined into pictures by illustrators of the Golden Age. Dare we hope we've made it to our own happily ever after from here? I'm glad you stayed with me and finished up the 3 episodes about Midnight Mother Goose. I think there was a little bit of something for just about everybody. Before we wrap up, I'd like to give a quick thank you to a couple of listeners. Over on Apple's podcatcher, Janazel08 suggested adding a little more background music. I wasn't sure if I might already be overdoing it, so I really appreciate you taking the time to share your feedback. And thank you to Scott Philbrook from Astonishing Legends for his kind note on Patreon. It says, "Creators recommending you Astonishing Legends." Quote, "I love all things about art history, and this podcast is wonderful in that realm. Taking 2 things I love the most, historic works of art and the paranormal, and exploring both of them informatively. Check it out. Scott." Thanks a bunch, Scott. If you'd like to dig a little deeper into this episode, please visit the Patreon page. There's always a free section. I'm working on getting the WGP Plus members extras. For this episode, I've included the 1970s interview with illustrator Marguerite DeAngeli and a Little Golden Age library of women illustrators with links to books and images and extended show notes ranging from Charles Perrault, the Brothers Grimm, and on that art list, there are men who were illustrators during that time too. If you'd like to support the show, you can find me on Buy Me a Coffee under Sue's Nick Art and the Whispering Gallery. I run on sketchbooks, pencils, and the occasional dangerously fluffy blended coffee. German chocolate or hazelnut truffle, or maybe a matcha with blackberry when the day calls for it. Every coffee helps keep the artist caffeinated and the dachshunds properly fussed over while I'm working on episodes. They are all fans of elk antlers, and those are safe for Luna to eat. A touch on the expensive side, though. You can also send me a note anytime at whisperingcontact@gmail.com. Right now, I'm working on a pencil portrait of a bulldog for a friend of a friend, another Rainbow Bridge Crossing tribute. You guys, if you could do me a favor and take a moment to share your favorite episode of the Whispering Galleries podcast with a friend, that would be great. Someone who you know shares that love of the spooky. One more thing to chat about, especially when an episode really sparks your interest. I almost forgot to tell you this one. What do you call a cow wearing a crown? A dairy queen. I've begun to research our next episode. Well, actually, a couple of them, and it's fascinating. One is about the premise of spiritualism and artists who received their art that they produced, as in from the spirit world, like mediums. The other one is about goblins. If you could pause and rate and review the podcast on the platform that you're listening on, I'd appreciate it. Kind words are appreciated, as the Whispering Gallery podcast is an independent podcast, meaning it's just me. And that's one way I'll see your input, but also I am fairly sensitive, so please be kind. Thank you for helping the WGP listeners grow. I love telling the stories. I have so many moments when I'm wanting to share what I've learned with you and taking notes so I don't forget about whatever it is. That might be in the middle of the night, at a doctor's appointment, at the vet, pulled over in a grocery store parking lot. So don't forget about the video. Actually, I posted about Peter and the Wolf, Luna's story, and the fairy tale coloring page over on patreon.com/whisperinggallery. No matter where you are, please reach for empathy and the tendency to be kind. It matters. And please take care of yourselves. A quote from Fred Rogers, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.'" Unquote. And remember to keep your flashlight close and your spooky art stories closer when visiting the Whispering Gallery. Thank you. Thank you for the sound effects and music attribution to the musicians and sound engineers who have provided the background sounds for this 3-episode series about Midnight Mother Goose. They are listed in the show notes. The Whispering Gallery podcast music is version 2 Spellcraft, number 142264 on Pixabay.